We're here with Megan Miller, who is the Senior Product Marketing Manager at Dell Tech. On June 17th, Dell Tech released its 41st annual Clarity Architectural and Engineering Industry Study, which identifies key performance indicators, market conditions, and industry trends. This is a benchmarking study designed to give firms a way to measure their performance in a variety of areas against their peers, including project management, financial performance, business development, and employee management. For this year's study, Dell Tech surveyed 415 architectural and engineering firms between January 21st and March 23rd. So the study period ended right on the cusp of the COVID-19 pandemic in this country. In our conversation today, we hope to focus on what engineers can take from this study, both in the short term to improve their operations despite the pandemic, and over the long term. Welcome, Megan. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So early on in the study, you say that changes that we've seen in the market over the past few months due to the pandemic make benchmarking even more critical for a firm's success. Why is that?
So when you look at what happens with benchmarking, a lot of times companies are looking not only at industry benchmarks, but also evaluating their own numbers on an annual basis or as they prepare for strategic planning. And as things are changing so rapidly, it just becomes more important that companies are keeping a closer eye on those metrics more regularly, because those things are, as we know, are going to change and they're going to evolve. And as you're looking at those numbers and you're monitoring what's happening in your business, then you're able to adjust or able to make decisions based on what's happening in your business more quickly if you're seeing those changes happen more frequently.
So on that, is it as the impact of the pandemic works its way through the market, it's going to affect those numbers, isn't it? So I mean, how do you pick the numbers that you want to benchmark against, because the market is changing as we go along?
Right. So when you're looking at the numbers, it's really, you know, the number itself is a piece of the story, but it's really understanding what that number is telling you about your business. So if you have a certain utilization rate, you know, looking at that and knowing what that was pre-pandemic times of looking at 2019, you're going to want to caveat that when you set your targets as you go into 2020 and figure out what the actual impacts are going to be of this. That's still your target, but you have to be realistic in knowing that may not be achievable now, but if it's dropping drastically, is that something that you expected, and do you know why in each of those metrics, just so that you better understand the details behind it, not necessarily the number itself.
So you're basically using it as a, I guess, as a benchmark and saying that it's, you compare your performance to it, and as time goes on, you say, is this a reasonable performance versus what we thought we could do?
Right. And I think part of that, you look at it too and say, as you look at multiple KPIs, if you're seeing a significant drop in one in your business but not the others, so if you're looking at the benchmarks in the report and you're 20% below what that number is in one area but not in the others, then that tells you that there may be some imbalance and something you need to address in the business. So if you're having a consistent decrease across those metrics, then you're probably where you need to be across the business. But seeing how those impact each other really becomes a key piece of that story.
So in the study, you cover a lot of key performance benchmarks. In a time like this, which ones would you recommend that firms focus on?
Yeah, so some of the ones that we really recommend focusing on are those that allow you to look at different aspects of the business. Oftentimes when it comes to KPIs, firms really focus on financials, and especially in uncertain times like this, but it's really looking at the whole story. So while the operating profit and looking at your utilization and how your collections are happening is vital to seeing what's happening in the business, it's also important to be monitoring what's happening in your pipeline, what's coming down the pike or not coming. You can monitor some of that through your win rates, or in some of those win rates, making sure that you're digging a little bit deeper and seeing, is there a lot of no decisions that are happening in those projects that may be an indicator of some things that are happening in those particular markets. some of the other metrics that we always encourage people to monitor closely are those around projects specifically. So there's a couple in there in terms of projects on or under budget and projects on or under or on or ahead of schedule. So making sure that you're keeping track of that and that project managers can see that information readily. If projects get delayed, if there's changes to what's happening in those projects as a result of this uncertainty, it's important that they're able to proactively manage that and see what's happening and adjust accordingly.
So on the just to take the project schedule benchmark as an example, I mean, a lot of projects have been delayed. Is it basically a situation of start up again once you get started and sort of just take that delay as having been a deus ex machina situation that just came and now it's gone? Or is that something you incorporate into your numbers?
So I think when you're looking at those, when I look at the project scheduled and whether they're on track, are there indicators that you have the ability to influence? So are you not scheduling appropriately? Do you not have the resources you need that's impacting those delays? If there's projects that have been put on hold or they're delayed, I would look at those as a project stop and a start. Not that they're necessarily delayed, but if you start to keep track of those and you find that, for example, I'm looking at the healthcare market and out of the 10 projects we have, 8 of those have been delayed, that can start to tell you different things that you may need to do in that market for your business. And so tracking some of those can really provide some key insights to your business as well.
In the financial area, the firms had a current ratio of 2.87 and a debt to equity ratio of 0.76, which, as you mentioned in the study, suggests that they're well situated for the economic slowdown. Is there any other data that in the study that supports that conclusion or contradicts it?
Yeah, so I think some of the things that we looked at specifically is around the trends over the past several years, and especially looking at the financial side of it, for those benchmarks, we've seen an increase in many of those for the last 8 years. We've seen that strong financial performance, so we haven't seen a lot of fluctuation. We haven't seen large dips in those, in the operating profits and other areas. So we really see that, you know, that's showing that firms they've been strong, they've had a lot of work and projects, and financially they're in a good position. We also look at some of the challenges that firms look at, and the top challenges this year really show us that, you know, if the financial stability of the industry was a challenge, then we would see more focus on cash flow and unpredictable spending environment and some of those challenges that we've seen probably 7 years ago or so, that those became the top focus. Now we're seeing firms focused on increasing profitability and really on the financial challenges there. What the second one that's identified this year is finding and retaining qualified staff. So having that strong financial position means that those companies can start to focus on other areas of the business and address some other things that may be impacting their businesses.
And does it also speak to, I guess, to the health of the industry? Because I think I recall that the operating profit has gone up for like 7 or 8 consecutive years.
Yes. Yeah. So if we look back at the trend there, we look at the last 10 years, and I could go back further than that, but at least for the last 10 years, that number has grown every year in the past 10 years for operating profit. The other thing that we also look at is we factor in what a high performing firm is, and we look at those that have an operating profit above 15% and a net labor multiplier above 3. This is the second year in a row that our net labor multiplier average is above that 3.0 threshold. So again, just pointing to the strong financial performance, our operating profit on average was also above that high performer threshold on average. So just show, you know, we've got some firms that really have had some strong financial years that I think putting them in a good position, but I do think firms were a little bit more conservative going into this year too. When we start to look at the net revenue growth forecast, we saw some a little bit more conservative approach to that going into this year, even before the pandemic. And so I think firms are, you know, we're already a bit hesitant of maybe not reaching those same thresholds and those same numbers coming into 2020. So hopefully they were already starting to prepare and plan for if something would happen and how that would impact their business.
Now, because of that, the strong financial performance we've seen over the past several years, is that a function of the market or is it a function of how firms are improving their operations? I know that's a tough call because there's
Yeah, I think it's a little
firms.
Bit of both, right?
A little bit of both, yeah, okay.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both because I think when you look at the markets, one of the key indicators that we see, especially for architecture and engineering, is when you have strong private and public markets both, it makes it easier for these companies to be successful. So when we come out of economic downturns, we usually see one area of the industry coming back stronger. Both of those sides of the industry really have been strong for several years. When we have conversations with companies around the country, you know, they all seem to say the same thing. They're really busy. They have a lot of work. They have, as we even saw in the Clarity report, they have strong backlog. You know, they're looking at backlogs of in excess of 7+ months at any given time. And so they're feeling confident that, you know, they have work to rely on for the months to come. And they are just seeing that, you know, there's more work out there. There's not a lack of projects. There's not projects that are getting defunded. So some of that, though, to your point, is also efficiency internally. People are leveraging more technology. They're looking at their processes internally and making them more efficient so that they can increase that profitability. They're able to reach some of their targets. They can attract the right talent so that they can fill some of those vacant seats. I really do think that for many companies, it's a combination of both. They're successful in the projects that they're winning, but they're also becoming more sophisticated in how they run their businesses.
Yeah, I don't know if this is a function of that, but I saw one of the things that jumped out at me was that 60% of the contracts now of the respondents are fixed price. Is that something that contributes to an improved bottom line? Is that a growing trend that you've seen?
So I looked back at a couple of the past years there, and I think it's pretty close to that 60% for the past few years. So if I look at 2018, it was, or 2017, it was 57%. In 2018, it was 59%. So there's some incremental increases in more of that fixed price. But I do think that that gives companies more flexibility in how they leverage those contracts if they have more of those fixed fee, those fixed price fee structures in place.
When I was looking at your stuff on or the data on client relationships, and three things jumped out at me. Sort of, and I'm not sure if they're contradictory or if they're complementary. First, the firm said that their top business development challenge is nurturing client relationships, but then they also said that only 44% of the firms actually measure client satisfaction. But then conversely, 76% of the firms said they are good at client relationships. Are those complementary in some way that I don't see?
So I think in some ways, it's the perspective of the different areas of the business. So when I look at nurturing client relationships, I look at that from the business development perspective and really having time to invest in those relationships, stay out in front of the next big project and making sure that you're top of mind when another project comes out. When it comes to client satisfaction and measuring that specifically, oftentimes that's done when a project is completed, and it's not done early on in the process, right? So it's not always done throughout the life cycle of the project. It's often only done at the end. Some companies feel like they get that feedback without doing formal client satisfaction reports. So I think that's where you get the 76% think that they're great at these client relationships, but yet only 44% are measuring. Some, I think, are measuring in a different way. They're just not doing those formal evaluations. And I think, you know, this industry is always striving to do better. So they're always pressed for time. So I think their challenge will continue to be making time for business development and making that client nurturing a key priority for their businesses.
On that 44%, it seems to me like a no-brainer to measure your client satisfaction? I mean, if you measure your client satisfaction from the previous job, you are basically setting yourself up for the next one.
Completely agree.
Is that 44%? I mean, I didn't look back to previous studies. Is that increasing? Is it decreasing? Staying the same?
For this year in particular, it did go down quite a bit, surprisingly. Okay. And what's even more interesting is the frequency of measuring that client satisfaction. So I mentioned at Project Complete, there are a lot of companies that only do this once a year, and they're not really getting that feedback on each project. In some cases, again, I think that's a time thing, and it's not seen as top priority. We're finished with the project, we're moving on to the next one. But I think there's a huge opportunity there for companies to really get that feedback. I will say that it's important to get that feedback from the right person, or have the right person go and seek that feedback. Because if, for example, a project manager was a challenge on a project, that client may not tell the project manager that was part of the issue that they may have had. And it could create issues, like you said, of going after the next project. So that's one area that I really think that companies should be taking advantage of, and find a way to be able to do more with client satisfaction, even if it's not a super formal process, but being able to do that so that really you can make sure that what's happening on the business development side and those nurturing of those relationships is also carrying through, and there's a connection there between the project delivery and the business development so that we're all in sync with what's happening with this client, how we're focusing on this client, and whether we're positioned well to go after the next project.
Makes sense, yeah. You've mentioned a couple times that that employee attracting good candidates is a prime concern and challenge for a lot of firms. Employee turnover in the study was about 13% annually. Is this high for our industry, and relative to other industries, is it high?
So usually what we look at is across the board for the past several years, it's about the same for what we've seen for turnover from the Clarity report specifically. We know that professional services firms on average have about 11%. So I would say that from an overall professional services perspective, the A&E industry does tend to be higher than that number. Historically, I think we've come down a little bit. There have been some peaks and valleys in this particular metric, but we tend to hover right around that 13-14% for turnover in this industry.
And in an economic slowdown, what does that number go up? Does it go down? Is people try to hold on to their jobs, or what do you find?
Yeah, so I think some of that's really going to depend on, you know, the different markets and the different companies, right? And where they typically are working. So if they work more in the public sector, they may see an increase in employees, and they may see that they need more positions filled, and they may lose fewer employees. The flip side is that there could be some challenges with people having too much to do if they do see an influx in one market or the other. The flip side of that, obviously, is that we have seen some companies that there have been some furloughs, and there have been some challenges in keeping staff. So I think really what companies need to be looking at in their turnover is it voluntary? Is it involuntary? What's happening in that? So maybe there's something that's more appealing in a different company that companies need to be considering. And just making sure that, again, they're watching what's happening with the workload so that they can adjust accordingly. We anticipate that there'll be some increase in this, but a lot of that is just going to depend on the duration of the pandemic and the impact, to see how far is this going to go and how deep will this begin or continue to impact companies.
And in their searching for going out of the market and looking for candidates, I was struck by a number, which was that 33% of firms track passive candidates, which jumped 8% from the previous year. What exactly is tracking passive candidates, and why did that jump so much?
Yeah, so if you think of tracking passive candidates, it's really keeping a portfolio, so to speak, of possible candidates. So if I know that there is a project manager at a company that is a strong project manager, they have a great relationship with certain clients that we work with, and maybe because of some relationships that they have with others within my company, and no, maybe they're not 100% happy where they are, they may not be ready to make a move, but I want to keep in touch with them and I want to keep them on my radar. So if you think about it, it's similar to business development. You're building those relationships, you're building that pipeline of candidates in the same way that you would a pipeline of potential prospects or clients. I think we're seeing much more of a move to this because, again, looking at the challenges in all the different areas, financial had, you know, finding and retaining talent, project manager has staff shortages and competing priorities. And so this piece of the business really has become much more of a focus for many firms. They're becoming more strategic about it. It's a more integrated process across the entire business. And many companies are moving to a more modern recruiting strategy. And one of those strategies is to really keep that pipeline of potential candidates for when the right position becomes available. You're not starting from scratch and trying to then find anybody that might be interested. You've already identified some potential candidates to make that, to start those conversations. And it's more of a warm lead for recruiting in the same way that you would want a warm lead from a business development perspective.
Now from all of you said during our discussions, it seems to me that engineering firms are getting more operationally effective as the years go by. Would you agree?
I think in some companies, absolutely. I think there are many companies that are becoming much more strategic. They're becoming much more more savvy in the way that they're running their businesses. But I do think in some cases, there are some companies that there's still some work to be done there. It may be in their processes. It may be how they're leveraging technology. But, you know, many companies are looking at, you know, the way we've been doing things for 20 years may not be the best way to do that anymore. And they're leveraging the expertise of their staff to find ways to make things better. For the companies that are doing that, I think they're seeing some of the progress like we've talked about here. In other companies, there's still opportunities for them to take advantage of, whether it's the technology, whether it's the process improvement, to be able to put themselves in that same type of position.
Well, if an engineering firm wants to get a hold of this study, how would they do that?
Absolutely. So if you go to deltek.com/clarity-AE, then you can download the report. It is a complimentary report that we provide to the industry. And in there, you can find dozens of benchmarks. You can see some of these 10-year trends in all of these different sections of the report. So we encourage you to check that out. We also have a deep dive webinar on each of these that are also available that you can dig into the results a little bit more, understand a little bit more about those trends to be able to better understand what you can do with this information. Because again, the number is just a piece of the story. It's what your numbers are telling you and really what you can do with that information to drive change and to be a catalyst for conversations within your company.
And I would concur, it is an exceptional report. So thanks so much, Megan, for taking the time to speak with us today.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity.